Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys had a good holiday. If you're like most families, you had some people you were glad to have sitting at the table and a couple that that you had to think twice about because we're human and that's just kind of the way that we are. I hope you guys were able to spend some time with loved ones. I know that there's several of us who have lost those that we love. Maybe you spent your first Thanksgiving without somebody that you love, and I just want you to know that I prayed for you, and I feel for you because that was definitely tough. Maybe you had somebody at Thanksgiving who, for the first time, you weren't sure if you wanted them there because of some circumstances that happened in your family, and if so, I hope that you were able to work things out. If you weren't, maybe we can help each other today. As we talk, because there's no reason not to be thankful for everyone who is sitting around your table, because every person in our lives is a gift, and we need to choose to see people that way. If I can get somebody to turn off these two lights, if they will do that, I've got a couple of pictures that I want you guys to be able to see, maybe see a little bit more clearly. We're going to spend about a minute using the internet probably to its greatest potential. And what I mean by that is we're going to look at a few pictures of cute animals. So I want to give you guys just a second to look at these right here. Just take a second and soak in all that cuteness. Some of you are like, this is the biggest waste of time I've ever had in my life. Why did I come to church today? We're going to spend just a little bit of time, and I hope that I'm going to be able to help make this your while. That is a real dog, all right? That is a real dog. I had to look at that picture a couple of times just to make sure that anything could be that cute. But I wanted you to just, whoops. That one's a bonus. I want to hold on to that one just for a second. Just wanted you to have a second to just bask in all that glory. God's creation, God's beauty. I don't know, but I love scared puppies. I don't know if you enjoy that quite as much as I do. I love scared puppies. I got a picture in a second that I love even more than scared puppies. Puppies defying gravity is also a good one. I like flying puppies. I think that may be the very dog that David and Elisa Kilpatrick have at their house, one just like it. But the only thing better than cute baby animals is dogs diving in pools to fetch balls. I don't know if you've ever spent valuable time on the internet searching for pictures of dogs diving in pools to fetch balls. If you haven't, you are missing out on a treasure trove of beauty and laughter. Those right there, they get me every time. I just love looking at pictures of dogs diving in pools. They're just unreal. Do yourself a favor and look at the bulldog. It's got so much extra mouth. It's like a basking shark when it dives into a swimming pool. Looking at those pictures, for those of you who aren't just completely disgusted by all that cuteness, how does it make you feel just to see cute little baby dogs? How does that make you feel? How many of you guys get a little bit of peace and happiness from seeing that? Several of us do. Several of us do. That's why cat videos are so popular. My favorite cat video is one where this cat's in a box at the top of the stairs, and it just goes off, and it just whoom. And all of a sudden, the cat goes up, and then it goes down, and it just disappears. And it is one of the best cat videos that I've seen. I used to love getting out lasers and running around, you know, and making dogs and cats chase lasers and then trying to make them run up a wall, you know, and things like that. But there's just some joy. There's just some joy and peace that comes from, I guess, the innocence and cuteness that you see from anything that's a baby. Now, don't get me wrong. There are such thing as some ugly baby animals and ugly baby babies. I mean, there is such thing. I mean, that's true. But there is just a feeling of peace and joy and happiness that you can get from that. I've got one more picture I want to show you. Somebody just said, "Aw," that was not the reaction I was looking for. That probably elicits a completely different feeling from you than looking at one of puppies. If you've ever been attacked by a dog, maybe that brings back some bad memories. I've been attacked by a dog, and we'll share that in just a little bit. A vicious German Shepherd. We'll spend just a few minutes looking at that in just a little bit. And I promise you there is a purpose to all those pictures. They'll illustrate something in just a little bit. So I want you to pack those feelings away just for a minute. If you're listening to this on a podcast, we just looked at a bunch of pictures of cute baby dogs. You can look at that, and then a picture of a dog diving in the water of a swimming pool after a ball, and then now an attack dog who is growling ferociously. So that'll catch you up if you're listening to this on the internet. But what I want us to spend just a few minutes talking about today is our anger and our resentment. And more than our anger, really specifically, I want us to talk about resentment just for a little bit. The title of this lesson is What's Guarding Your Heart? We all have something that guards our heart. For some of us, it is it's the love of Jesus Christ. For others of us, it's our anger and our resentment. And we're going to talk about that just for a few minutes today. Over the summer, we went on a mission trip to New Mexico. And one of some of the coolest moments that we had while we were in New Mexico was our dinner times. We did dinner a lot like we have done dinner in the past when we've had our CSI weeks, our Christian Serving in Columbus weeks, where we've gone out in the community and done service projects. We would all come together and sit at big long tables and eat dinner together. As we served up in Carlsbad, New Mexico, every night at dinner we would go to the local church that we were serving with, and we would sit along these large tables, and we got fed just some great meals. This night we had spaghetti and salad, so I had my spaghetti and my salad. And I tried to choose to sit by some people that I don't know, because one thing maybe you don't know about me is I love collecting people's stories. I love a good story, and I like to ask a lot of questions. If you've known me for very long, you've probably been interrogated by me at some point. If that bothered you, I apologize. I tend to ask people too many questions. I like to know everything. There's not almost nothing that I'm not interested in. Everything interests me, especially people's stories. So I sat down with my salad and my spaghetti across from this man in his mid-80s, and he's got his spaghetti and his salad, and I've got mine, and he's kind of just staring at his, and I'm tearing through mine trying to get to my real meal, which is the dessert. And in between swallows, I just start asking him questions. You know, what's your name? What do you do? How long have you lived here in New Mexico? And you probably know people like this, but I think we tend to do a couple things with our personal stories. Some of us stuff those things down deep, and getting to somebody's story is like opening up a fortune cookie and getting one little sentence at a time and piecing those together. You're lucky enough to be fortunate to get another piece of a person's story, and then you kind of paste those together, and then you kind of get the big picture of somebody's life. But those of us who've had a lot of hurt, those of us who have had some pain, our stories kind of rest right up to the top, and they spill out to whomever will listen. And this guy was one of those guys. So I start talking to him, and he says, "You know, I was part of the Forgotten War." And I thought, no, I didn't know that. Apparently everybody had forgotten about it, so I didn't know. I said, no, I didn't know that. He said, it was the war between North and South Korea in the 1950s. I said, wow, what was that like? Don't ask anybody what war was like. It was terrible. It was terrible. And he began to tell me. He began to explain that he was captured and placed in a POW camp and put in a box for several years, to the point that he was forgotten. He was a forgotten soldier in a forgotten war. And he said that the only thing that he and some of his fellow captives got to eat were fish heads that would be thrown in their little boxes from time to time. No amenities in his box. There was a little creek that ran through the middle of it. And he said pretty much daily somebody would tell him that he was going to die. And several of his fellow soldiers did in various torturous ways. So every morning as the light began to shine through some of the cracks in his box, he would wonder if it was going to be his day. Until finally some treaty was reached and he was released. And when he came back to Carlsbad, he was able to visit his own tombstone because he had been assumed dead and a funeral had already occurred. And his tombstone is still there in Carlsbad. I guess he's waiting to actually fill that tomb. And he tells me this story, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around how all of that must have felt and trying to understand his perspective. And he just looks at me and he says, "I hate the Koreans. I hate the Koreans. And I'll never forgive them for what they did. You can never trust a Korean." So I took a bite of my salad. And I said, "I understand how you feel. I would imagine that a lot of people in your place would feel that way." And we continued to eat, and we continued to talk. And that meal has haunted me. That meal has haunted me ever since we left. Because as I've thought through that conversation again and again, I realized that I did not say what I should have said. And maybe it wouldn't have changed anything. And maybe it would have just made him angry. But I should have said, "I understand why you hate the Koreans. But you can't." I should have said, "You know what? You have to forgive them. You have to forgive them. Because unless you do, there's not a place for you beyond that tomb. Unless you do, there's not a place for you beyond that tomb." And I wish I could have soothed his anger a little bit. And I wish I could have had the right words. I wish I would have used the right words. Because I tell you, I thought them. But I did not want to make him any more upset than he already was. And now my prayers are prayers of regret. For a man who's probably still as angry today as he was 6 months ago and has been for the 60 some odd years since that war has ended. So I want to say just a couple of things about that, and I want us to think through this, because upon hearing that story, you may sit here and think, "Man, I understand. I would not forgive him either. I could not forgive him. Could not forgive them either." To which I would say, you're probably right. Only through the power of Jesus Christ and the realization of his forgiveness can you ever experience the kind of change of heart necessary to let something like that go. And I think about the story of Jacob and Esau and the family feud that went on in that story, as a birthright was stolen for the price of beans. And I think about that family and how that situation could be different, because the result was a separation of family for years, wasn't it? There were no Thanksgivings together for years in that family because one guy felt cheated and the other guy felt in danger. And they separated for many, many years before finally coming back together, and that resentment was let go of. But what could have happened in that story? What if Jacob would have said, you know what? You're right. This was shady. Let's split it. Let's split it. It was an Israelite heritage law. The firstborn gets the blessing, gets the birthright, so that the line can continue. But I haven't read about a law that said a brother can't decide to share. A brother can't decide to let some of that go if they want to. He could have chosen that. I think about the story of the prodigal son. And not the prodigal, but the older brother who refused to go to the party and eat steak. He chose sour grapes over steak. And his dad said, son, it's your choice. You can choose to have this meal with us or not. But you're the one who's losing. You're the one who's losing. And maybe some of our Thanksgivings were like that this year, where we sit across the table from someone we felt betrayed by. And we didn't realize that we were the ones who were losing. Our food didn't taste good because our mood wasn't good. And we were the one who was losing. Or I think about Saul and David. If Saul just would have embraced God's ordinance, how different would Jonathan's future have been? Don't you know that David would have given Jonathan a seat right next to his throne? Because they were brothers. Instead, it ends with Saul losing his life and the life of his son, and everybody except a lame man named Mephibosheth, who David showed mercy upon later. Because of resentment. I think resentment comes in a few different packages. I think we resent people who've hurt us. I think we resent people who have gotten in our way. I think we resent people who we feel like have cheated us and kept us and have become obstacles in our lives. But here's a few truths that I want you guys to hold on to as we think about resentment. Number one, choosing forgiveness, choosing to forgive someone who has hurt you or who has hurt a family member, is not a betrayal. I think many of us hold on to resentment because we feel like if we don't, we're setting aside the honor of somebody that we love and we're betraying their trust. And sometimes family members come up to you and they say, how could you? How could you forgive that person after all they've done? And we sit back and say, you're right. And we let other people's resentment feed into our own. But if you believe that, I want to try to help set you free a little bit today. Choosing forgiveness is not a betrayal of your family. It may just be the salve that helps the rest of your family choose forgiveness as well. Choosing forgiveness is not a surrender. It doesn't say what you did is okay. The way you treated me is okay. The way you treated somebody I loved is okay. I've decided it wasn't as bad as I thought it was when it happened. Choosing forgiveness is not a surrender. It's not a white flag. It puts you in a position of empowerment. It's a victory. Choosing forgiveness is a victory. It allows you to move on and move forward. Lastly, choosing forgiveness is an acknowledgement of the full extent of the forgiveness Jesus chose for you. Matthew 18. If your brother sins against you, this is verse 15, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. Let's look at Jesus' words from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, chapters 5 through 7. I've highlighted a few of them that I think would be interesting for us to look at. These are Jesus' words, not mine. This is what he taught. Chapter 5, verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Verse 21, you've heard it said to those of old, you should not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who's angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to counsel, and whoever says you fool will be liable to the hell of fire. So if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Verse 38, you've heard that it was said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, don't resist the one who's evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. If anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. Verse 43, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who's in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Don't even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Don't even the Gentiles do the same? You must therefore be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Chapter 6, verse 14, if you forgive others their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive you your trespasses. That's a tough one. Chapter 7. Starting in verse 1, judge not that you will not be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that's in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there's a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly how to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Verse 12, so whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Let's think about that log and speck just for a second. Anybody in here not ever had anything in their eye? We all have. I mean, maybe babies haven't had any. But we've all had something in our eye, and it's a big nuisance, isn't it? An eyelash in your eye, it's horrific. A grain of sand is pure torture. We've all had stuff in our eye. But have you ever asked somebody to come up and take their finger to get a speck of dust out of your eye or an eyelash out of your eye, to take their finger and just, could you just stab it out of my eye? Could you do that? One of the techniques that I hate the most is when somebody holds your eye open and they just, you know, just blow right in it to make it water. I hate that. If you ever had that happen to you, I feel you. I don't like it either. But if somebody's going to get something out of your eye, you want it slow and very careful. I don't know about you, but my head starts shaking and I can't control it. When somebody starts coming towards my eye, my head just starts doing like that right there. It's like my body is saying no. Even though I'm saying yes, do it, my body's like, no, that's a bad idea. This is not smart. When I think about this story that Jesus uses, I think about that situation. Guys, if we're going to help somebody make changes in our lives, we cannot just jab at their sins. We're called to do so with gentleness and respect. And that's how you have to approach an eye if you're going to get something out of it, isn't it? With the utmost gentleness and respect. You want barely a touch. Guys, these are Jesus' words. These are not mine. All that we read from the Sermon on the Mount are Jesus' words. In three chapters, he speaks more about forgiveness and mercy than he does anything else. And not only does he speak about forgiveness and mercy, he binds us to forgiveness and mercy. So what does letting go of resentment look like? It looks like letting go of wanting payback towards someone, and instead asking for blessing. In Luke chapter 6, we're told to bless those who curse us. Bless and do not curse. I don't know about you, but I have conversations in my head oftentimes of the past, of high school sometimes, and thinking about things that I wish I would have said to somebody to really shut them down. I still do. I'll be driving from my house to Walmart, and these memories will just pop up in my head. And I'll get angry and I'll start thinking about what I could have said in high school if I'd only had the vocabulary that I have now. And how I could have shut that person down. Or maybe how I should have just punched him in the face and stopped him from talking in the first place. Guys, that's resentment and it's evil. And I need to let that go. But the only way that I possibly can is through prayer. When Jesus hung on that cross and he said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing." He acknowledged in our lives that we need God to empower us to bring forgiveness to others. Because only God can change the heart. And what we need is a heart change because we've got broken hearts, don't we? We've got some broken hearts, and the only way that our heart is going to be mended is by asking God to intervene. And when you begin to pray blessings on people and not curses, all of a sudden your perspective towards them can change. Restoring a person's position in the family is part of letting go. Maybe you got someone in your family who's been through a divorce. Maybe you've got someone in your family who has cheated. Maybe you've got someone in your family who has stolen money. Maybe you've got someone in your family who has been so angry that they've hurt everyone else. What would it look like to restore them to your family? And I'm not saying that you should surround yourself with a person who's still abusive. There are some people that we need to just pray for and continue to pray for before they're safe to bring back, if they ever are. Some people we cannot continue to be in contact with, and that is true. But I think there are more people that are safe that we refuse to be with then there are people who are dangerous that we need to separate ourselves from. letting go looks like reunion. It looks like turkey that tastes good instead of turkey that tastes bland. Or maybe letting go is a conversation or a letter. If somebody has sinned against you or you have sinned against somebody, go to them. Before you come to me, God says, go to them. And there are some people that we cannot find and have contact with. There are some people who are lost. And maybe we just need to write a letter and mail it to nowhere. But we need to write that letter. And there's some people that maybe we need to have conversation with. There are some people that we have been hurt by who have no idea that they hurt us. And we need to decide whether we need to go to them or just write the letter and let it float off in the air. But we need to choose to bless and not curse, and choose to forgive. Because unless you forgive, you cannot be forgiven. We'll close with this, and I'll bring those photos from earlier together. My next door neighbor got a puppy. He named her Sheba. She was a German shepherd. He was sitting on his back porch in a chair when I first met Sheba. I walked down the grassy hill over to Eddie's house. Eddie was about 6 years older than me. He said, "This is Sheba, and she's going to be an attack dog." And boy, was she. He spent the next 6 months training that dog to be vicious. He cut off the tail on the back so it just had that little nub, you know, so it didn't look like a normal dog. It looked like a brutish dog, and he fired that puppy up. And my best friend Reed, I don't know why Reed did this, but every day he would come over to my house and we'd play football and stuff like that, and as Eddie went into the house, he would march down the hill with a stick, and he would get up to that chain link, and that dog would come and bark, and he would poke it with a stick, just poking it. Reed moved on, and I stayed home, and that dog evidently thought I was Reed, or it associated me with Reed, because I was 7 years old when he got that dog. I was 14 when that dog finally was able to jump its own fence, and it was a high fence, and I'm in the backyard with the family. A bunch of us are there. I'm in my winter coat. It's about this time of year, and my hands are in my pocket, and that dog, and slobber is coming off of its mouth, and it jumped over that 7-8 foot tall fence that was there and just took off towards me. I didn't know what to do. I just sat there with my hands in my pocket, just like that. That joker came up, bit me, and then turned around and jumped back over the fence. Just ran up to me, took a bite of me, and ran and jumped back over the fence. And it was like, that's what you get. After all these years, that's what you get. That dog held a grudge. It never bit me again after that. But I've been terrified of those kind of dogs almost all my life because of Sheba and because of my best friend Reed poking it with a stick. Puppies are cute when they're babies, guys, and sometimes our anger is too. And our friends come up to us and they say, "Hey, I understand your pain. I'd feel just as angry as you do." And they accept our anger. They embrace it. Sometimes they're angry too, but over time, you know what? They move on. And if we continue to feed our anger, that puppy grows until it becomes a dog. And we start to bark and growl at everybody who comes into our lives because we hold on to all of that resentment. Until our friends start having to make excuses for us. "Look, once you get to know him, he's a good guy, I promise. His bark is way worse than his bite. He's just had some life that he's had to go through. Get to know him, I promise you, you'll see." But soon, if we continue to feed that and we own that and we tend to take care of that dog, it becomes a ferocious beast in our lives. And even our friends will abandon us because they can't stand to be around us. And all we have for company is that anger. And no one will approach us. No one will reach out to us because we bite off the heads of everyone who comes and talks to us. And that's what resentment does. And I think about the story of Cain and of Abel. And every day as Cain watched Abel give God his best, Cain sat back. And his resentment grew until God approached him and said, "Cain, all you got to do is change your gift. And I'll be just as pleased with you as I am with Abel. But if you don't, this anger's going to ruin you, boy." And because Cain wanted to lower the standard more than he wanted to increase his, he killed his own brother. And the result was his banishment from his family and his being alone. Guys, that is your future if you will not let go of your resentment. That's what Jesus knows. And as a follower of Christ, forgiveness is not something that we should give. As a follower of Christ, forgiveness is something that we must give. Because when we refuse to forgive, we refuse to acknowledge the forgiveness in our own lives. So if you're holding on to something today, if there's something that you need to let go of, I want to invite you to come up and receive prayer. If you need to talk to a family member and pray together as a family, that's great. If you need to write a letter, write a letter. Don't spit on the cross of Christ by refusing to let go. Because in letting go, you receive grace. Let's stand and sing. On this